Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. In a few moments, a young Australian will be telling us why he walked all the way from Brazil to Spain. I'll be bringing you some information on the musical theme for the World Youth Day events, which take place in Sydney, Australia next week. And I'll be quizzing our popular Latin lover about various aspects of Roman leisure time. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. Well, he started out on the 12th of December 2006 and has only just stopped walking, covering 15,259 kilometres on foot. That's from Capo Branco in Brazil to Cap Finisterre in Spain. His name is Samuel Clear, and he's due back in Australia this weekend in time for the World Youth Day celebrations. Travelling down under more or less at the same time as Pope Benedict XVI, who leaves Castel Gandolfo, where he's currently staying, on Saturday 12th of July. But getting back to Sam, if you wish to find out more about him, why he decided to walk all that way, and what happened to him along the way, do stay tuned, as in a few moments I'll be sharing with you a conversation I enjoyed with him when he passed through Rome.
I've walked all the way from Brazil to Rome, minus a quick trip on the train through Siberia, and I'm walking around the world praying for the unity of Christians.
How did this come about?
I'm a mechanical engineer, but I've been working for the last 5 years in Australia as a missionary with youth, and in that time become very aware of the broken church, the disunity.
You say you're a missionary. What does that mean?
I was working with Youth Mission Team Australia.
As a lay missionary,
full-time, 2 years as a volunteer and then 3 years as a paid manager with the team. And we work with high school students and university students, basically looking at many different problems from self-image, self-esteem, relationships, leadership issues, suicide prevention, many different questions, but the answer is always the same, leading them towards Christ. So effectively working as an evangelist.
You were doing this side to side with being a mechanical engineer?
No. I haven't been a mechanical engineer since I've never really. I graduated from university and felt a calling to actually put my faith into action, which I wasn't doing while I was at university. And it led me to Youth Mission Team Australia. And then from there, I never went back. I intended to only do 1 year as a missionary. But once there, I found it difficult to leave. I really got a great sense of satisfaction in working as a missionary and in stretching myself. I was never a people person. I grew up on a very large farm in Australia, and I was used to wide open spaces and cows and sheep. So to be working so closely with young people, with teenagers, was a big reality jolt. In seeing how those lives were being transformed and in seeing people develop a prayer life, in seeing people develop a relationship with Christ and seeing those peripheral problems dissipate was phenomenal. I didn't want to go back to engineering.
How do you do that? I mean, you presumably you support yourself.
As I walk?
No, in Australia?
No, it's an organisation. It's Australia's largest youth organisation. We have support from dioceses, from the archbishops. We do a fair bit of fundraising as well throughout the year. And the youth mission team members actually get paid employment on Mondays and Tuesdays. And then the money they earn from that goes into the common account to pay for our expenses. And then from Wednesday through to Sunday, we're working in high schools, in colleges, in universities, and in parishes, in churches, drawing the young people further along in their faith walk, depending on who we're meeting with, obviously, and on the age group we're working with.
So this faith walk you've been on, you decided to go on it by yourself or...?
Yeah, initially I was... Well, to begin with, what happened was I read a book by Patrick Madrid, an American author. He had compiled a book of 11 testimonies of men and women from a Protestant, Pentecostal or evangelical background who had become Catholic. And I was reading it from a personal faith-building perspective, just as an exercise of getting to know... Well, learning a little bit more about the church. What hit me, though, was that an evangelical minister and a Pentecostal person were... when they became Catholic, they lost their friends and family. Their friends and family disowned them because they felt that they had disowned Christ by becoming Catholic. Now, in that moment, it was as though I caught a glimpse of Christ's pain at the broken church. And I could not let it rest, and it kept eating at me, and it took over. That broken church, the body of Christ, is broken, as though Christ has been crucified again. And I couldn't do anything. As an engineer, I like to do things. I like to see a problem, and I like to try and solve it. And I kept praying about it, and in the end, came to the conclusion that I couldn't do anything. And I actually prayed that. I said, God, love to help you. But I can't. Sorry, mate, you're on your own. I can't help you. And then once I'd shut up, I just felt the Lord say, you know, Sam, you're right, you can't fix it, but I can. I need you to pray. So that's where it began from. And I in the end, sold everything I owned. I resigned from work with Youth Mission Team Australia. I'll actually be returning there when I finish the walk. But I sold what I had, what I could sell, what people wanted. I had a Land Rover Discovery and a Suzuki GSXR 1100 motorbike. So I sold both of those, and I spent a year planning this, and in that time was in communication with my Archbishop, with the manager of the National Director of Youth Mission Team Australia, with a few other people. We put the plan together, and I got the money together and started walking. So self-funded. Unfortunately, when I often knock... I thought this would happen, and it has happened. When you knock on the door... The first thing many people ask is, what do you want? And if I did happen to require money, then it detracts from the call to pray for unity. So I'm walking and praying for unity and extending that invitation everywhere I go. I stop in Catholic churches, Orthodox churches. I stop and meet evangelicals, Protestants, Pentecostals, any person who calls himself Christian, and extend the invitation to continue Christ's prayer from John 17, that we would be united completely so that the world would see the Father's love through our unity. So we're not just talking theological unity, we're talking social unity as well. So in truth and in love.
Can I interrupt your tale? You grew up a Catholic?
Yes.
So anyway, go ahead. So you decided to start in Brazil. Why?
Look, there's no particular reason for the route that I'm taking other than it's around the world. I started on one side of the Atlantic Ocean and I'll finish on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean.
Which is where?
In Spain. So began in Brazil, finished in Spain. And it's simply a matter of... The walk is a means of carrying the prayer. And to a point, it's attention getting. The walk and walking 30 to 50 kilometres a day, and at times through some pretty dangerous countries, coming through Central America, I was often held at gunpoint and knife point, and it wasn't a really pretty place. The reason for it was to bring attention to unity and the need to pray for unity, and the consequences of a unified church.
Why do you think it's so important?
Because the unity of the church witnesses Christ's love to the world. Plus, a unified church is also on a social aspect, particularly walking through South and Central America. I was offered hospitality by men and women who lived under sheets of tin, and I actually slept there next to them under their sheets of tin. And then at other times I've stayed with Christians who aren't sleeping under sheets of tin. They are sleeping very well, and a couple of cars in the garage. And, you know, there's a massive gap socially between Christians in the world. So to be united with one another on that social aspect and theologically is to be Christ to one another. And none of us are ever going to reach perfection in life. But we are all called to continue to walk towards it. And unity, to be united, is how we do that. And it's what Christ implored of us. It was one of his final prayers, and St. Paul as well.
How many people do you think understood your message? Do you think it was the people under sheets of tin or people with two cars in their garage?
I think everyone does. I think that all people do understand from different perspectives.
Was there ever a moment when you felt you wanted to give up?
No, there haven't been times when I wanted to give up. There have been times when I wanted to be somewhere else. You know, quite seriously, when you're looking down the barrel of a loaded shotgun, you don't really... I didn't want to be there, looking down the barrel of a loaded shotgun and being held at knife point and walking along in Canada at minus 33 degrees Celsius or in Brazil at plus 47 degrees Celsius. I didn't want to be there in that moment, but I never wanted to go home. I just wanted to finish the day or be elsewhere.
Come wind or rain.
Yeah, I've seen pretty much every type of weather that we can have, from extremely hot, dry days, humid days. I've seen a tornado. I clipped a hurricane in, Nicaragua. I've been in ground blizzards, thunderstorms, everything, fog. Yes. I change my gear about every 6 months, so I have, at the moment, I have more summery gear. This is not what I was wearing while I was in Canada, Russia, Belarus. I was more like a snowman. I was puffed up with lots of gear and kept warm. Just keep walking, keep praying. And it makes the prayer very real. It's about as basic as you can get, prayer. But it is our fundamental call, and it is the foundation of not just unity, but our Christian walk. And that's where I had to start, because I really didn't have anything else to offer. I'm not theologically trained. I'm not philosophically trained. I don't have strong connections outside of the Catholic Church. My role is prayer, and it gripped me so much. I guess, look, when I became aware of the broken church, it was like standing at a car accident where there are bodies lying around. It's difficult to simply stand there and watch. They're sort of compelled into action.
We talked about the bits at gunpoint, but
yeah.
There's the other side of the coin, isn't there?
There is. Having grown up on the farm and spent a lot of time out on the mountains behind our farm, I really do enjoy the outdoors. And the idea of walking around the world, for me, perhaps isn't as big a step as it would be for someone who grew up in the suburbs in an apartment, in a block of flats. I thoroughly enjoyed walking across the Grand Savannah in Venezuela, up along the beaches of Costa Rica and through Wyoming in the United States. You know, that was, and even here in Italy, coming down through Tuscany. You know, they are, and I've seen three wolves, which apparently many of the locals have never seen a wolf in their life. In Wyoming, I saw a mountain lion, a cougar. I saw a puma in Venezuela. I see a lot, because I'm walking quietly and often along country roads. I see a lot that even the people who live there don't see. So there's a real... I don't know if it's a moment of ecstatic joy, but it's a really peaceful joy, a Franciscan moment, if you will.
You were listening there to Samuel Clear, who's due back in Australia in time for World Youth Day celebrations in Sydney next week, an event which has its own musical theme. Charles Collins tells us more.
Every nation, every tribe, come together to worship you.
We every day have to die to ourselves, and for us as musicians, we die to our gifts.
For my part, I feel like a child of mercy. Everything that is given to me, I feel like is of mercy that God gives to me.
Guy Sebastian and Gary Pinto are the two men who composed the official song for World Youth Day 2008, called Receive the Power. This song recalls the passage from the Acts of the Apostles that serves as the theme for the event. You will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses. Both men are excited about the fact that their music is playing such a significant part of World Youth Day.
It's funny what God has in store for you. Like, you don't even expect it. I didn't even know about World Youth Day. You know, being brought up, in a Christian church, totally different denomination, and we didn't even know about World Youth Day. And suddenly, you know, there's this whole massive, massive group of believers who are coming together as one.
We feel like this is going to transform Sydney, and we just know from seeing what it's been like. I know Guy hasn't been on one at this stage, but I know that he will see. It's going to be amazing for the whole place of Australia.
The official song for World Youth Day is one of the things that participants often bring back with them, and just a few chords can bring back a string of memories about the event.
To see in your sight 100,000 people walking down the street carrying their flags, singing their songs, and people in their houses, as we're passing their houses, feeling the love and the joy, it transforms the city.
The Pope leaves for Australia on Saturday. I'm Charles Collins.
My thanks there to Charles Collins for filling us in there on the musical theme for World Youth Day events. Meanwhile, be sure to watch the change of pace and tone as we join our popular Latin lover, Carmelite, Father Reginald Foster, as he enlightens us on various aspects of Roman leisure time. How do you say Vatican Airways?
Oh, sunt onde aeree Vaticane.
That could be the radio waves.
Yeah, what are the airwaves? Aeterie, okay. Unde aeterie, aetheriae.
How'd you say charter flight?
Oh, charter flight. Volatus.
It's hiring an aircraft or a ship for a special purpose, no?
Ah. Oh, volatus peculiaris.
But charter, doesn't it come from carta?
To write up something, to register something, I imagine. A registered flight or something like that.
Well, there's some charter flights from Rome to the major holy sites. And the headrests in the aeroplanes bear the words from Psalm 27. I'm searching for your face, Lord.
Facem tuam quero, si. Yeah, facem tuam, Domine, quero. And that's on the headrests?
That's what I read.
Oh, Gad, I wouldn't do that.
Did the Romans have a tourist trade?
No.
How do you turn tourists into pilgrims?
Well, you give them a spiritual motive. That's what you do.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that the Romans had pilgrims, no?
Well, pilgrims, as we understand, no, they didn't. What were pilgrims to where? They had curious people who wanted to understand Roman history. That's one thing. Whether you'd call them pilgrims, I don't know.
So pilgrims and tourists were out for the Romans?
Yes.
How do you say that? In that?
For me, excludebantur. Peregrinatores et viatores. As I say, well, one or two examples, but really out here on the streets today, no.
One or two examples, like?
I mean, like one person wanted to come to Rome to see the historian Livy. You know, the great historian Livy. And he saw him and kissed his hand and he genuflected and he went back to Spain.
Who was this man?
I don't know who this guy. But he just came to Rome just to see the historian Livy. Well, if you want to call him a pilgrim, you can.
Well, he's more of a tourist, really.
Well, yeah, but he had this veneration for the historian Livy.
But, I mean, tourism is also about that. I mean, you do special tours to go back in history.
Yeah, it depends on what they are. Rome, you know, they have these cut-off buses now.
How'd you say a cut-off bus?
Este vehiculum amputatum.
And a double-decker bus.
Hey, no. Duovus cum ordinibus.
I like the vehiculum amputatum best.
Okay.
Maybe what a pilgrim does is, opposed to a tourist, is he bolsters or she bolsters her spirit, perhaps.
Well, yeah.
Would you say bolstering your spirit?
Sustentat, vel sustinet, vel... Fovet animum suum. That's a different thing, you know. I mean, tourists just go from one city to another, but a pilgrim wants to come for, like, you know, spiritual nourishment or whatever you want to call it.
Coming to Rome, for example, peregrinatio ad Petri sedem.
Mm.
Did I get it right?
Yeah, that's down the street here.
No, what does it mean, though?
Well, okay, you say a wandering or a coming to the seat of Peter.
It was established in the mid-1930s by Pope Pius XI, who founded our radio station.
I didn't even know that.
And then Pope John Paul revised the statutes of the Vatican Pilgrimage Agency. How do you say pilgrimage agency? Vatican's pilgrimage agency.
Okay, Vaticana Societas Itineribus Componendis, for putting together trips. Oh, you can say everything in Latin. There's no problem there.
Did the Romans enjoy sort of tangible symbols when they went places? Like, you know, did they bring souvenirs back when they travelled? For example, I don't know, Mark Antony, when he came back to Rome, did he bring souvenirs for his relatives or things like that?
I don't remember. I don't think so.
How do you say souvenir in Latin?
Souvenirs and monumenta.
Like, for example, in the Forum, in the Roman Forum, you have all these souvenir sellers and things like that.
Today?
Yeah.
No, in Rome they did. I'm sure they didn't. Like pieces of hair from Claudius or something? No. The Romans didn't.
They didn't sell pieces of hair from Claudius in the Roman Forum. Come on.
Well, I don't know what they're selling today. I don't know. Postcards with relics or something? Don't ask me what they're selling.
How do you say Rome is a pilgrim's paradise?
Peregrinatorum paradisus. I really have to watch the time. What time is it?
It is 9:42.
Yeah, okay. 3 more minutes. That's it.
So, basically, the Romans were travellers, but not tourists.
Yeah. They probably didn't perceive the meaning of that. You know, I mean, they had the empire all over the world, but to go to some place to see, to bring back a chunk of Cleopatra, yeah, I really don't think they were that interested. Well, very good.
Wait a minute.
Someone was asking, when is your program now? It's been changed about 50 times.
Yeah. Oh, it's on Fridays.
Friday. Mm. Not Saturday, Sunday anymore.
No. How do you say employment of leisure?
Employment of leisure. OCE usurpatio.
Religion, of course, presided at the birth of every Roman holiday, no?
Oh, yeah.
How do you say that? Religion.
They're very superstitious.
But religion isn't superstition.
Well, that's what Lucretius said.
Lucretius claimed that...
That religion was superstition, or was nonsensical human nonsense.
How do you say nonsense in Latin?
Nuge, well, stupiditas.
So anyway, getting back to what I asked you, religion presided at the birth of every Roman holiday. How do you say that?
Nascenti omni celebritati Romane presidebat religio. There's the subject of the sentence. Mm. The Latinist in this can understand this.
Romans had that Marxist concept that, you know, that the empire made use and extended old religious festivals as a means of consolidating power over the masses.
I believe that.
So how do you say opium of the people?
Yeah, opium. Well, there's something there. Hmm. They would scare them with religion and keep things down with religion. And the emperor was religious and the gods were talking with the emperor. So you're out and the emperor is in. Got it? That whole mentality.
They were frightened that the Romans were frightened that a people that yawns is ripe for revolt.
Yeah.
How do you say that? A people that yawns
heons,
is ripe.
Well, heons or oshitans. Oshitans. Paratus est ad rebellionem.
In June, for example, in Rome, a fish fry for the prize winners of a fishing contest. Did you hear of that?
Yeah, I think maybe passing in the newspapers.
Piazza in Piscina, maybe. A note of Festus indicates that it was really in substitution of fish for human victims.
Hey.
And he wrote, Pisciculi pro animis humanis.
Oh, little fish in substitution for human spirits, for human souls, or lives.
Then in October there was a horse race in the Forum, the result of which betrays its primitive origin. Woe to the winner, Flamen.
Flamen, he was a priest.
of Mars sacrificed the luckless racehorse immediately after it had won the victory.
Oh, my.
So woe to the winner.
Yeah.
Meaning the horse, Paul.
Vincenti.
The luckless racehorse was sacrificed immediately after victory.
Ah.
Say that.
Yeah. Continuo post victoria maxtabatur. Vincens equus. In Felix.
They salvaged the blood.
Mm.
How do you say that?
Servaban sanguine.
What do they salvage it for?
I don't know. To sprinkle. Like holy water. Used to sprinkle blood on sacrifices and everything.
But not on people.
Well, no, if they were sacrificing people, but otherwise on different victims, certainly.
And different Roman neighbourhoods contended the privilege of exhibiting on the walls of one of its buildings the trophy of the October horse.
Oh, Lord.
How do you say trophy of the October horse?
Trophéum is Greek, of course. Trophéum.
We'll find a Latin word then.
Equi Octobris.
Well, trophéum. I don't like trophéum. Use another word.
What are you going to say? Well, triumphus. No, that's Greek too. Okay. Laurea or monumentum. Monumentum equi Octobris. I never heard of these stories at all.
Well, it was to make people stop yawning. so they were, because the people that yawns is ripe for revolt. So what games did you...
They had nothing else to
do. Tell me what your favourite game was in Roman times.
I don't like most Roman games at all. They were too cruel and nasty and wicked. Greek games were nice, like light athletics, which the Romans didn't have. We're massacring people with swords and animals and everything else. And even if you see Ben-Hur, like they had a chariot race and everyone was getting massacred. The Romans weren't cultured, you know. They were very crude and backward. The Greeks were cultured. And they didn't have a Colosseum. The Greeks never had a Colosseum. And that's why they had the Olympics, you know, like light athletics, you know, and jumping and swimming and dancing and stuff. But the Romans didn't understand this. They were crude.
We started off by talking about Vatican Airways. In your opinion, if Romans became Christians and they wanted to go on a pilgrimage today, what site would they go to? What site would they choose to take their Vatican Airways to? Would they go to the Holy
Romans
Land?
Romans as Christians? Well, they'd probably go to the Holy Land. I mean, imagine they would go to the Holy Land. Some would go to Spain, like Compostela, but most of them would go to the Holy Land, obviously. Some would also go to Turkey, like the missions of St. Paul. There are nice things there, too, which is very interesting, to go to the different cities that St. Paul visited.
Oh. How do we know that he went to those cities?
Well, they're actually the apostles.
Both. What would you call Vatican Airways in Latin, if you had to give it a title?
Well, I would say Aerea Societas Vaticana. Aerea Societas Vaticana. Vatican Air Group.
How would you say hostess?
Hostess, hospites.
Steward?
A steward, administre. These are ministre.
Pilot.
And pilot, okay. Gubernator. You can say all this stuff. That's easy. That's not our problem. Okay, dear, I have to go.
And a heartfelt thanks there to our popular Latin lover, Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, the Pope's own Latinist. And that brings us up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for listening. Should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.